Mike Birbiglia is a stand-up comedian who's recently taken his act to Broadway. Well, make that off-Broadway. His one-man show, Sleepwalk With Me, is currently in its 10th week at the Bleecker Street Theater in the East Village, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to the show today. Hello.
Thanks a lot.
How big a transition has it been for you to go from performing in comedy clubs and colleges to presenting an 85-minute long monologue on stage?
It's not as different in terms of what I do.
So you don't do a lot of ad-libbing when you're doing your regular comedy act, your stand-up?
I suppose, yeah, in that sense, that it is different. I do ad-lib a lot more when I'm on tour, but over the years, I've been doing stand-up for about 10 years, and I would do, you know, comedy clubs and theaters and colleges and any range of venues, and the reason why I clung to theaters over the years is because people listen, and that's very key. You know, if you're in a comedy club, it's like, you know, really they're trying to push food and liquor
and drinks,
and
if they have enough liquor, then they're not going to listen to you anyway because they can't pay attention.
Absolutely. And so my one of the reasons why I wanted to sit down in a theater for a while is just, you know, people listen. And that's nice, and then they laugh, and that's nice too.
Well, the real trick is to make it sound fresh every time if you are working from a script. George Carlin used to do that. In fact, he'd script in the uhs and the wells and
yeah,
everything.
Absolutely.
It's almost like being an actor, isn't it? A comic actor.
It's almost like being an actor. One would venture to say it is being an actor.
Has it helped to have your first show in the theater presented by Nathan Lane?
I think it's helped tremendously. I mean, one of the things about my audience over the years is that it's primarily been from Comedy Central, which the demographic is very young. You know, it's 13 to 35, really. And so that's who's been showing up for many years to these shows. And every now and then I would do something like, you know, this summer, they put my Sleepwalking story on This American Life. Last year I did something at The Moth in New York, which is a great storytelling series. And and a lot of times I would do theater benefits also, and it would reach this audience that was, you know, 30 to 100 kind of thing, and these people would come up to me and they would go, "How come we've never heard of you?" And so I was like, "Well, how do I get to how do I reach these people?"
People of my own age.
Yeah, sure. And that's what's been tremendous about this show is that sometimes people will bring 9-year-old children and there'll be a 100-year-old person in the crowd. That's great.
So Nathan Lane just saw you perform somewhere and decided that he wanted to help you?
I guess he had my CD. I have two CDs with Comedy Central Records, Two Drink Mike and My Secret Public Journal Live. And he had, I think, the Secret Journal CD and came to see me at Caroline's. He was doing the play November on Broadway. The Mammoth play in March, and I was playing Caroline's, and it was actually the only date on that tour I hadn't canceled. I was doing 21 cities in April, and I canceled the whole tour because I was doing a CBS pilot. I was doing a sitcom pilot based on, you know, the Mike Birbiglia project or whatever it was, and
didn't make it.
Didn't go. No, we shot it. It had a tremendous cast. You know, Bob Odenkirk played my brother and Frances Conroy played my mother. I mean, it was like just this all-star cast. It didn't get picked up by a hair. And then I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put my show up off Broadway because I'd like people to listen.
Well, this show is all about sleepwalking. And I've always thought that sleepwalking, like amnesia, is something that was more a convention of literature or movie scripts than reality. But you actually have this REM disorder?
It's called REM behavior disorder. It's a phenomenon where people have a dopamine deficiency. That's the chemical that's released from your brain into your body when you fall asleep that paralyzes your body so you don't act out your dreams. People who have this are commonly running away from some kind of demon or wild animal. And some people, excuse me, have been known to literally kill the person they are in bed with while remaining asleep. There are cases where a guy will have a dream, there's a burglar at the door. You take a bat, beat the burglar to death. It's not a burglar, it's his wife, and she's dead. And thematically, what the show is all about and what makes it a play, if you were going to argue it's a play, which I'm not. I mean, some people come, they go, this is a play. And I go, oh, okay. Some people go, it's stand-up comedy. I go, oh, okay. You know, I don't really care what people call it.
It's a performance piece.
It's a funny show. And but thematically, what makes it a story is that it's about denial and about the degree to which, you know, because I read about REM behavior disorder and I was like, maybe this is what I have, and I still didn't see a doctor.
Well, when did it start showing up?
Started when I was in college, started about 8 years ago.
So when you were a kid, you didn't have any problem?
No.
But if you hadn't jumped out the window of a hotel in Walla Walla, Washington, you probably wouldn't have dealt with it?
That's true, yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to is I remember I would have these incidents. Like, for example, I would have a dream I was in the Olympics for some kind of arbitrary event like dustbustering. And they'd tell me I got third place. I stood up on the third place podium feeling good about myself. I'm new to the sport. And they'd say, actually, you got second place. Move over to second place podium. And it starts wobbling. And I'd wake up. I'm not making this up. And I was falling off the top of our 5-foot bookcase in our living room. I was living with my girlfriend at the time. And I would land. I landed on the floor on top of our TiVo. And it broke into pieces. It was like one of these stories you hear where people black out drinking. They wake up in Idaho. They don't know where they are. They're just like, oh, no, Hardee's, you know. But it was in my own living room. I was just like, ah, TiVo pieces.
That is a nightmare, waking up in a Hardee's.
Yeah, and then I would go to bed. I remember I went to bed, and my Abby, my girlfriend at the time, woke me up, and she said, Michael, what happened to the TiVo? And I said, I got second
she
place.
She slept through the whole thing?
Yeah, slept through the whole thing. And you know, I said I got second place, and it's a long story. And that was the first time I thought, well, this seems dangerous. Maybe I should see a doctor. And then I thought, maybe I'll eat dinner.
Well, actually, if you had dreamed that you were dust busting, you probably could have cleaned up the room, and it would have been a lot less dangerous. In the case of the La Quinta Inn in Walla Walla,
yeah,
you dreamed that you were part of a military unit and that you were being targeted by an enemy's heat-seeking missile. Boy, these are wild dreams that you get.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly accurate. I was performing at 5 colleges in 4 days in the state of Washington and Oregon, states of Washington and Oregon, and one night I fell asleep. I had a dream there was a guided missile headed towards my room. I jump out of the bed. I say, what's the plan? Because there are these military personnel in my dream. And they say, the coordinates are set on you. And so I decided to jump out my window.
The window was closed.
The window was closed, and I was on the second floor.
So you had to break through the window?
I jumped through a window like the Hulk. I say that because literally
when the Hulk does it, it's a breakaway window, you know, and it's usually made out of some kind of candy.
This
is glass.
Yeah, it's not candy glass at La Quinta Inn. It was real glass, and so I jumped through a window like the Hulk. I say that because that's how I described it at the emergency room.
Mm.
It's a very difficult thing to explain when you've jumped through a window.
And when did you wake up? When you were running across the lawn of the hotel at 3 a.m. in the morning in your underwear?
That's precisely it, yeah.
Would this have been a funnier story if you slept in the nude?
It would have been yes. I absolutely agree. Maybe that's what makes people believe it's true because I didn't go for it completely. It is true, by the way. A lot of times people come up to me after shows and they'll be like, was that true? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, was it? And I don't know how to respond to that.
Assume you're exaggerating.
Well, yeah, but
for comic effect.
I'm actually not. This actually happened. It's funny, though, because I lived.
Well, I love your description of talking to the hotel desk clerk.
the desk clerk, I jumped through the window. I wake up as I'm running on the front lawn in my underwear, screaming. And I don't know what to do. And so I walk to the front desk. And the desk clerk was fortunately mildly retarded. And I say fortunately because he was completely unfazed by what had just happened. It's 3 a.m. The phones are ringing off the hook from people staying at the hotel who just saw the guy jump out the window screaming, I'm bleeding in my underwear, and I say, hello, because you have to start somewhere. I'm staying at the hotel. I had an incident wherein I jumped out my window. I need to see a doctor. And he said, all right. And I said, that's the best possible reaction
I could receive. Do you know if he or anyone else at La Quinta has heard you tell this story?
I know there are many people in Washington State and from Walla Walla and Pasco, which is nearby, have heard this story. I don't know if the actual people involved have, but at some point they're going to have to hear this.
My guess is Mike Birbiglia, who is performing his one-man show, Sleepwalk With Me, at the Bleecker Street Theater in the East Village, 10th week. Was this an open run?
Yeah, I think so. I think we just extended through mid-February or something.
Well, that's terrific. Well, yeah. it's because the reviews were great.
Yeah, though I was afraid of the reviews. I was like, you know, they're going to this is a classic thing that people do, the reviewers do to comedians. They go, it's funny, but. Mm-hmm. And this one, they actually, you know, the Times and the New Yorker and the Post all said, it's funny, but it's actually a show. It's a good show.
So. Well, you must have come up with ways to prevent yourself from doing this.
Prevent myself from
jumping out of windows.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I discussed this in the show, but when I go to bed at night now, I'm diagnosed with REM behavior. And so I take a medication and I sleep in a sleeping bag up to my neck and I wear mittens so I can't open the sleeping bag.
So when you're on tour, you have to bring a sleeping bag with you wherever
yes,
you go?
Yes, I know.
And
I know that
mittens?
Sounds preposterous, but that is actually true.
You were told that the best way to get started was to do stand-up. You wanted to be a writer, didn't you?
Yeah. Initially, when I was a dramatic writing major in college. I went to Georgetown, and I wanted to be a writer for Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and I was an intern there.
That was your dream, your
goal. That was my dream. That was my goal. I interned there after my freshman year in college, and basically, what I witnessed is that a lot of the writers were either from an improv or stand-up comedy background, and that's how they showcased what they did. And so I was like, okay, I'll do both of those. So I went back to school, and I was in the improv group for 4 years, and I did stand-up. And then along the way, I was like, oh, I actually like stand-up.
But it takes a certain kind of personality to do that, and a lot of comedians talk about all of the anxiety, the flop sweat that they experience.
Especially
when you're starting out, because the audiences don't know who you are, and they're not going to. When you have some kind of name recognition, well, they'll pay more attention.
Well, I'm convinced that to become a comedian, you have to be delusional, because starting out, there's so much failure. And amidst that failure, you have to tell yourself, it's going quite nicely. Because if you didn't, you'd never get on stage again. You'd just be like, I guess human beings don't like me. Because it's not like a play or a movie where if people don't like it, they can go, well, we didn't like the script or the costumes. With stand-up, if people don't like it, they're basically saying, we don't like you, mm-hmm. you know, your personality.
So did you have to some degree, come up with a persona, a stage persona?
I tried that at the beginning. I had many variations on Stephen Wright. And,
well, you know, if you've met Stephen Wright, you know that he's not the guy who does that act.
See, I've never met Stephen Wright.
Oh, well, he's been here.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I he's the first guy I ever saw live. And so I was convinced, you know.
Gilbert Gottfried, even more, you know.
I've met Gilbert.
He just talks like a normal person.
That's right. He's very soft-spoken and sweet. And so I was trying to invent a personality. And then along the way, I discovered myself on stage, and that's that. I've heard, you know, I heard a famous interview with Seinfeld, where he said, you know, the difficulty in stand up and why it takes so long to get good, is that you have to become comfortable with being yourself.
What about the just simple things like pacing, which I'm assuming is different when you're doing a stand up routine and as opposed to an 85-minute-long monologue.
Sure.
The New York Times review of your show by Neil Gensliger called your pacing simply perfect. Is this because that was a natural thing that came out of the script, or did you have a director who was helping you do simply perfect?
Yeah, I've been working for 4 years with a director named Seth Barish. He is the artistic director of the Barrow Group, which is a tremendous theater company in New York. And I had seen his play that he directed, The Tricky Part. It was a one-person show probably about 4 or 5 years ago that Martin Moran starred in. And it was about an 80-90 minute monologue. And I saw it and I was like, this is what I want to do.
How long were you working on this monologue?
About 4 years.
So this was different than working on a comedy routine?
Absolutely. I mean, because it's precise to the word. Whereas stand-up, what I've discovered from doing the show is that with stand-up, there are many tricks that I didn't realize.
First thing you do is you go up to somebody in the audience and say, where are you from?
Well, I don't do that. But that is a trick. But I don't. I've never been good at that.
What are
that.
You doing with him? He looks like a jerk.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a genre of comedy. You know, these guys that walk on stage and they're like, "Nice shirt, loser," and everyone's like, "It's so true. His shirt does suck. This guy's a genius. I'm from Jersey." That's not my forte. But there are a lot of subtler tricks, like, you know, just that you can, if you feel the room kind of going away mentally, you can address that. You can kind of discuss, where are we? What are we thinking about? And then we can riff on that.
And then you may have hecklers during a stand-up routine. But I imagine there's no hecklers during this.
Well, that would be fascinating. I don't like the plot point. I don't know what the heckle would be.
So where do you go from here? Do you go back to stand-up, or is there another show that you're working on?
I'm concerned the stakes aren't high enough. I'm trying to think of theater heckles. I'm sorry, what was the question?
I was wondering whether you're going back to stand-up, or are you working on another show?
I'm working on a film I'm writing right now, a narrative film. And I'm working on shooting this as a concert film. So I'm working on those two things. And then in terms of what I do next, I that's going to keep me busy for a while. Two films, that's a lot.
And meanwhile, you're also performing every night, at least through February.
Yes. And I'm writing a book. I'm writing a book of essays, of nonfiction essays.
And you'll be on This American Life with a few of them, I assume.
Yes, yes, I
Sleepwalk with Me is at the Bleecker Street Theater, 45 Bleecker Street in the East Village. Thank you so much, Mike Birbiglia, for being on our show
Thanks,
today.
Leonard. Nice chatting with you.